Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. It's the 28th of May today. It's 10 to 8 in the morning, an overcast morning. The sun was shining at 6:30 when I woke up. But at 10 to 8 now, having shaved, had a bath, had a cup of tea and a cuddle with my beautiful lady, and got myself dressed, it is no longer sunny. We are off to the farm shop this morning to get some good quality grass-fed food. Cat is wanting to go out, went out 2 minutes ago, came back in, now wants to go out again, and no doubt will say, oh, it's wet and damp, I want to come back in. Bloody animal. But there you are, that is it. I hope you're all well, ladies and gentlemen, listening to this. I'm going to set up today and film my video in the kitchen. I've got a specific one. It was just something a friend of mine happened to mention, because it disappeared. He makes videos and he hasn't done one for a while. And I thought, oh, are you okay? So he said a few things and I thought, ah, yes, I need to help him out by doing a little video, which I can send him. And then, but of course, it will be of benefit to other people, hopefully. Hopefully it will. I mean, it may not. It may be completely rubbish. But I thought I'd do it in the kitchen anyway. So I'm just in the kitchen, as you may or may not be able to determine. And I'm just going to tidy up a bit because, not that it's a mess, just make it a little bit more photogenic. Which isn't hard in my kitchen. I like my kitchen very much. But it does get cluttered. And we wash up every day, you know, at the end of the day after a meal, so that we don't have to come down and see a cluttered house. That's it's nicer, isn't it? But sometimes you let it slip a little bit. There's a couple of items here to wash up, cups mostly. We had a lovely chicken casserole last night, which was very successful. And then we watched a film recommended to me by somebody called A Handful of Dust, which was based on an Evelyn Waugh book written, I guess, in the 40s, about, or maybe in the 60s. I don't know when Evelyn Waugh was writing, actually. But it was about the 1920s, really. And if you've not seen it, it's an interesting film. It's quite absorbing, except the ending of the film is a bit unsatisfactory, really. It was one of those that just kind of didn't have closure, as Julia described it. It had closure, but it was, you kind of felt, well, and then what? It was one of those, and then what? But I don't want to tell you the end, because you may want to go and watch it. It's quite a long film, but beautifully shot, and had Judi Dench in it and a couple of other known actors, although I'd recognise their faces, but I couldn't put names to it. Made in 1988, Handful of Dust, sort of about the aristocracy, a couple who live in a massive, great, big, but rather ugly massive estate house, which they had inherited, I suppose, and it's a love affair type thing that kind of goes wrong, I suppose. Anyway, watch that. We haven't watched a film for a long time. We've been away last week, so didn't watch any telly. Whenever we go away, go into these hotels or whatever, and we had a lovely hotel up in Craneage at the De Vere Hotel, the De Vere Craneage Estate, it was, which was a house mentioned in the Doomsday Book. Nice old house. It became in the 18th century. Well, it was a family home, obviously. It was a family home, and it got redesigned in the 18th century. And then later, when sold, It was sold to a lunatic asylum in the 19th century, which is interesting. And there was a lot of loonies up there when, well, there were certainly Julia and I as loonies up there. In the 1970s, it turned into a hotel. Anyway, the point of that was to say, sorry about all that gurgling noise, was to say that it was a lovely hotel, but we never turn on the telly. Not once. Not once. We never turn on the telly. We don't need a telly. We don't need mainstream media. It's funny. Some people just, that's the first thing they do when they get into a room, like in a hotel, switch on the telly. It's like people can't live without the bloody thing. I hate it. Absolutely. I can't bear now the sound, because it's just awful. It's awful. The sort of pseudo conversation that people have. I must clean my steps. They need repainting. I'm just looking in the hallway. It's absolutely disgusting. The trouble with my house, as I've mentioned so many times, it's almost boring. Oh, what do you mean it is boring? Is that going in and out the house to get the wood and what have you, constantly bringing in dirt and dust and wood chips and things. And of course it gets onto the bottom of your slippers or your shoes and is transported around the house. And I don't have a maid to do it, to clean. And she's not here half the time. Well, no, I do a lot of the cleaning. I just sometimes don't even notice it. That's one of the problems, isn't it? You're so used to living with it. And then I'll look at the carpet and go, oh my God, the state of that. In the front room, a lot of it is tobacco fallen as one's loading up the pipe. There's probably now accrued a whole tin of tobacco that over the year or two that I've been puffing. When we came back, there were some delightful pipes sent by Albert, which I shall feature in the next pipe smoking video. So that was very nice of him. Thank you very much, Albert. I don't think he listens to this. I don't know who listens to this these days, but thank you for those people who did. And I've just had a nice couple of WhatsApp voice messages from my daughter, Georgie, who's in New Zealand. She's moving house. And so caught up with her. Julia has a nice collection of various essential oils and tinctures and her herb, smoking herbs, which is on the little coffee table here, looking very nice. And I tried one last night. Julia gave me something. What was it called?
Mistletoe elixir and some fly agaric.
Yes, I don't know which one it was, but it's only like 3 drops on your tongue. And 3 coins in a fountain. Sorry, I always think of...
3 cigarettes in an ashtray.
Yes, I took 3 drops of that and had very vivid dreams last night. So rushing around, driving the van quite fast and leaping into canvas director's chairs, make of that what you will, ladies and gentlemen, but very vivid. And I woke up from that absolutely exhausted and in the night and went to the loo. I soon fell back to sleep again and had pleasant dreams, so may well try it again, see what else occurs. Maybe something more adventurous will happen, who knows. Anyway, yesterday was a day of writing. Oh, and I've got a book called Butterfly Moments, a biography of R.F. Delderfield, Ron Delderfield, by Marion Lindsay Noble. And it's a strangely put together book, I have to say. I did have a quick read of it. Not all of it, obviously. I just delved into little bits. One of the reasons I bought it was I was particularly interested to know and learn how long did, Julia knows what I'm going to say, how long and how much time did it take Mr. Delderfield, have you done that to make me sit next to you? Could you put the big light on for a minute? How long did it take him to write his books, particularly the saga books? Because I suppose in some respects I feel like I should have completed my book, and what with going away for a week and doing the interviews and doing the videos each day, answering the endless emails, I just felt like, well, I don't know how I could do it any quicker. And also, sitting at the screen is not particularly conducive to me. However, RF Delderfield was bashing it out on a typewriter.
And I did. He didn't have emails to sort
And he out. Didn't have emails, and actually, you know, he had his. He didn't have to do the editing, which is what I'm doing at the moment.
I dare say he didn't have any cooking, cleaning, and all of that to do either.
No. So I just wanted to read you the bit that I found quite remarkable, if I can find it again, because it talks about how long he was.
Mark it again. It's remarkable.
It is remark it again. Is that what you said?
That's what I said, something like that. Something like that.
I should have marked the page. I didn't know I was going to read it out until I suddenly just saw it just now. I'm not sure that I can. One of his famous books was God is an Englishman. I'll just read this bit. It says here, Ron was in the middle of creating a new canvas, his biggest yet, a four-volume saga of which his readers expect the first volume, God is an Englishman, by March 1970. He doesn't want anything to interrupt the flow of his writing, and he refuses to leave his beloved Devon simply to get into a slinging match with TV companies, which I gather he was, because they were changing things. Also, he wasn't getting repeat fees for his work, for the scripts that he wrote. A short trip to the investiture of the Prince of Wales, to which the Western Morning News has sent him, is enough travelling for 1 year. So, like, one trip. Ron explains in an interview in September 1969 that his new saga is an attempt to analyse how Britain came to play such a dominant role in the destiny of the human race. It is a huge canvas stretching over three generations of the Swan family. Adam Swan, cavalry during the Indian Mutiny, not only survives the action, but is also presented by fate with a precious find, a broken casket which contains a string of rubies. Anyway, he goes on. Oh, here it is. He tells a bit about the story, but I won't go into that bit. And then it says, Ron has always been writing 6 hours a day, 7 days a week, during this period of his life, from 1967 to 1972. It seems as if the floodgates of his matured creativity, had been opened. And his God is an Englishman is 687 pages, it says here. The Swan Saga planned to run to 4 volumes. It has a lot of close print. Yeah, it's quite small. So there's a lot of words in it. God is an Englishman alone counts for 687 pages, but now Ron's publishers, Hodder and Stoughton, ride with him on the wave of success without fear of a colossal disaster. Well, you can imagine printing hundreds of thousands of books of 687 pages, and if it bombed, they would be left by having to get rid of them all. But he apparently, I saw it somewhere else, I can't find it now, it sold, I think in the first year, it sold 60,000 hardback copies and 500,000 paperbacks.
Very nice.
And that was just the first, you know, the first one. Anyway, 6 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I've obviously got to, you know, get my seat in the saddle a little bit longer.
I think he was a little bit too excessive. I do think you need at least a day of breaking it up and restarting the cycle.
Well, in some ways it killed him. He got
That's it.
Lung cancer, they say, and he died, I can't remember exactly.
61, I think?
Either 62 or 66, I can't remember, but it was too young. And, of course, with a bit of moderation and what have you, he could have probably written another 10 books. And so the world is bereft of them. And they are lovely books. I do enjoy them. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there because I want to get on with this video and then get that out and then get off to the farm shop this morning and then get on to the... answer the sodding emails. You know, by the time you do that, and then I've got an interview, I want to get on to finishing my book, which has taken too long. Oh, and the other thing, it took him 4 years to write the first two volumes of God is an Englishman. So it was taking him roughly 2 years to write one book. He'd, as it said in there somewhere, that he had an editor, and the editor struggled to keep up with the flow of the manuscript as it came off to him, which I find quite interesting, that one would write, I don't know how many drafts then he would have written, because one obviously wrote and he hadn't finished the book and must have been sending it to the editor as he went, instead of sitting back and contemplating it with the second or third draft. Maybe he did write one draft and then did the revision draft, as it were, and sent that to the editor. Maybe he did that. But I think he must have plotted out the stories to a greater degree because of the characters that he has in them. In the sagas, he actually draws out, what do you call it, when they, like, ancestry, family tree, a sort of family tree of all the different characters and how they're all related and where they are and all of that, which presumably he must have. I mean, I would think that sort of thing would require a wall in which you pin character briefs and their history and what they've done and who they've met and slept with and relationships and all that sort of thing, you know, on a thing. It wouldn't have the computerized version that we might have now, or an index card system, I suppose, because how could you hold it all in your head? Anyway, I found it interesting. I don't know whether you did, but yes, that's a book that arrived. It's only a slim little book, so it'll probably take a few days to read it through. And it talks about his domestic life and all of that. But there we are. Anyway, I will leave you now. Thank you for listening. Take care and look after yourself, and toodle pip.